It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, we enjoy adventure in our theater of the mind. Later on, we'll hear an early broadcast from the Escape series, but right now, it's suspense. From August 26th, 1962, Mason Adams, Matt Cooper, and Gene Gillespie star in The Lost Ship.
And now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. In a moment, Act One of The Lost Ship, written especially for suspense by Irwin Lewis.
It's a sharp curve ahead, Harry. Be careful.
Don't worry, I see it. That was a close one.
Harry, you hear something?
What?
Sounds like a siren. Harry, it does sound like a siren, doesn't it?
Shut up. Let me listen. Yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe it's the police.
How could it be? We lost some hours ago.
I don't know, but it's getting louder.
Can't take any chances. We better get off this main road fast. Yeah, that looks like a cutoff.
Oh, but it leads straight across the desert. It isn't much of a road.
No time to be choosy. Hang on.
Wait,
we can't cut back. Those police might be patrolling the highway. We'll wait until dark.
Oh, can't you slow down? I'm getting sick.
Just a little longer, honey. I want to put as much distance between us and the highway as possible.
What happened?
I don't know. I'll take a look.
What is it?
Broken spring.
Oh, what do we do now?
We can't stay here. Grab the bag and let's go.
Oh, but where?
We're on a road of some sort. It's got to lead someplace. Let's try those hills.
What about the suitcase?
Leave it in the car. This little bag is all the luggage we need.
A lot of good it'll do us out here.
Where there's a road, there's bound to be a house and people. What's in this bag talks any language. Come on, let's go. Walk any faster.
Oh, I'm trying, Harry, but these rocks are killing me. Oh, I've got to rest a minute.
All right. Here, sit on my jacket.
I'll get it all dirty.
So what? We'll buy 1,000 jackets once we hit the border. Sit down.
Oh, what a relief. It's so hot. What's that?
That sounds like a coyote. Don't worry about it.
Oh, Harry, I'm scared.
Now, don't go hysterical.
Well, aren't you frightened? Even a little?
Sure I am. Down to my shoes.
Oh, we must have been crazy.
There's 50,000 arguments in this little bag to prove we're not crazy.
We'll spend the rest of our lives running.
Once we get to Mexico, we'll stop running.
But we're leaving our home, our friends, everything and everybody we know. Is it worth it?
What are we giving up? A stinking two-room flat with peeling paint and crawling roaches this big? You won't miss that for a minute. You think I enjoyed standing in that teller's cage, handing out money all day long to little people who had no more right to it than I did?
They weren't stealing.
Well, now, don't go moral on me. Listen, I'm past 40. A man gets to that age, he gets tired wanting things and not being able to afford them. Hey, isn't that smoke up there?
Where?
Over to the right, between those two hills. Sure it is. That's chimney smoke. I'll bet there's a house up there. Come on, Viola.
Well, hiya, folks. Kind of off the tourist trail, ain't you?
We were wondering.
No sense wandering outside. Come in. Come in. Make yourselves comfortable. Yeah, your car broke down, huh?
Why do you say that?
Well, nobody'd walk here if they could ride. And take a look at your shoes. Lady, I'll bet your feet are full of blisters.
Oh, you're so right.
Well, take off your shoes and sit down by the fire. I'll poke it up. Starting to get nippy now. The sun's gone down.
Oh, thank you.
I was fixing myself some supper. Pork and beans. Be mighty proud if you'll join me.
Thank you, Mr.
Townley, Pete Townley.
I'm Harry Turner, and this is Mrs. Turner.
I'm pleased to meet you. I'll open another can of beans. It ain't much, but it's filling.
You live here all alone, Mr. Townley?
feet, ma'am. No sense being formal. Yep, I live here all by my lonesome. Going on 20 years, I reckon.
20 years?
You ever have visitors?
Oh, once in a while. Expecting a neighbor of mine. Day after tomorrow.
Neighbor?
Yeah, Sam Higgins. Lives about 40 miles from here. Drops in regular, twice a year.
What do you do about supplies, food and things?
Well, I got a Jeep in the back. I use it to go to town once a month for supplies.
A Jeep?
Yeah. Guess you didn't see it coming up here. I'll drive into town first thing in the morning, get Bill Jenkins from the garage to come out and fix up your car.
Can't you go right now?
By the time I get back, it'd be pitch dark. No, better wait till tomorrow. Well, let's see if the beans is... Oh, say, they sure are. Yeah, I hope you don't mind 10 plates. Yeah, well, let's dig in. You know, I think those beans are pretty good. Either of you folks care for any more?
No, thank you.
No, thank you, Peter. Here, I'll give you a hand with the dishes.
No, don't bother, ma'am. Won't take more in a minute.
I'd like to get that Jeep and take off right now.
Oh, we couldn't do that. He's a nice old man.
I don't like spending the whole night here.
It's safe enough.
Yeah, let me know when you folks is ready to hit the hay. I'll bunk down in the shed and back.
Oh, no, we wouldn't think of putting you to such trouble.
Oh, don't worry about it, ma'am. I can sleep anywhere, anytime. Besides, that bed ain't much softer than the floor.
Pete, don't you ever get lonely living here by yourself?
No, I like it like this, just me and the hills. I spent nearly 30 years prospecting for gold. Didn't find much, but enough so's I can buy a little food and the few other things they need every now and then. So why look for more? Now, most folks dream about a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Well, I got that, too, waiting for me over in the hills and the desert out there.
I guess that's what you call a great beyond, huh?
Oh, shucks, no. I don't mean when I'm dead. I'm talking about a real pot of gold, bigger than anything you ever seen or dreamed of, probably.
In the desert?
I don't understand. What is in the desert?
A ship, ma'am. A great Spanish galleon. And it rides the sand dunes of the desert like it was sailing the seas again.
A ship in the desert? That's impossible.
I'll tell you how it was, son. There's a legend that hundreds of years ago, a Spanish ship come sailing up the Gulf of California, having come from Mexico or Peru or one of them other South American places. And as it was sailing up right close to shore, a huge storm come along, followed by a tremendous tidal wave, which swept it clean onto the desert. Must have been the granddaddy of all waves, I reckon. Well, after many years, the waters went back, leaving the ship high and dry, miles from the gulf or the river that feeds into it. In a couple of hundred years, the shifting sands have buried it, of course. But sometimes, when the wind blows up just right, it blows away a lot of the sand, and you can see the upper deck of that old ship from the top of that hill, just over there. According to the legend, too, the hold of that ship is just jam full of treasure.
What a lovely story.
A pretty fairy tale for children and old men.
Harry, that's not a nice thing to say.
Oh, that's all right, ma'am. Of course, he's right. But it is a pretty fairy tale. Just so happens, this fairy tale is true.
What is it, Viola?
Come over here. I want to show you something.
Now, what are you so excited by?
I was straightening out things in the cabin after you left. I found these.
Coins?
Yes, but what kind? Gold coins. And look at the words on them. Onza de Oro. That sounds Spanish, doesn't it? And look how old they are.
I see. There's a date on this one, 1540.
42.
What kind of coins are they, Harry?
I've seen some like them at an exhibit. They're Spanish doubloons. Where would Pete get them?
Don't you remember his story last night?
What, the Spanish galleon? Don't be ridiculous.
All right, how do you explain them?
I can't. No, it's impossible. Pete.
What's up, son?
My wife found these in the cabin. Where did they come from?
Oh, them things. I reckon they come from the ship.
What do you mean?
Well, some years ago, a young fella come staggering in from the desert. He was in pretty bad shape. Hadn't had food or water for days, it seemed like. I tried to fix him up, but he was too far gone. But before he died, he moaned something about finding a ship out in the desert. I found them coins in his pocket.
I don't believe a word you're saying. You're either crazy or the biggest liar I've ever met.
Harry!
Son, if you're so all-fired skeptical, why don't you climb that hill and take a look for yourself? Now, the wind seems to be coming up kind of strong. You might be lucky. In fact, I got an old pair of field glasses you can take along. But, son, if you do see the ship, for your own sake, don't let it give you any fool ideas.
Harry. Harry, I can't climb another foot.
We're almost to the top. Here, grab my hand. There. Now, just a few more feet. You made it.
Oh. Yeah. Now that we're here, what? I can't see a thing with the wind blowing sand in my face.
I doubt if there is anything to see. That doddery old man tells us a fairy tale and we buy it. All we'll get for our troubles is our lungs full of desert.
Why did I let you talk me into climbing up here? Look at my dress.
Yeah, might as well head back. That old man... Wait a minute. The wind is dying down. Take a look through these glasses. There. I still can't see a blast of thing but sand and sagebrush.
Did you see something?
Can't tell for sure. I'd like it a better focus. Viola!
What is it, Harry?
I don't believe it.
What, Harry?
I see a broken mast and a part of a hull buried in the sand. Viola, the old man was right. There is a ship out there in the desert.
Well, I kind of thought you might see it. Haven't seen it myself in a spell. Figured it was about time for it to show up again.
It was there, just like you said it would be.
You've known it's there all this time, and yet you never went to look for it?
Well, like I told you, son. What for?
Because of the gold. All right, you do what you want. I'm going after that ship.
No, that ain't sensible, son.
Why not? I could see it clearly. It isn't far from here.
Distances are deceiving in the desert. That ship's a lot further than it looks. And that's mighty rough country out there. It's easy to get lost. And if you run out of water, you're finished. And chances are, by the time you got to where you think the ship is, a sandstorm will come up and bury it under tons of sand again. You better forget it.
Not on your life. Your Jeep is equipped with sand tires. It has gas, water, tools. That's all I need.
Ma'am, I surely think it ain't smart. You ought to try to talk him out of it.
Harry, maybe it is too dangerous.
What's the danger? Because Pete can't get up enough energy to drive a few minutes into the desert to make a fortune?
What about the other man who found the ship and died?
I don't know anything about him, and I don't care. If there's gold in that ship, I'm going to get it.
But why? We have enough now. You said so yourself.
How can you compare 50,000 to what could be in that ship? And the gold's probably only part of it. Those old Spanish galleons used to come home with their hulls bulging with Inca and Mayan treasures. My God, Viola, we can be rich. We can be rich! We can make a deal with the bank, return the 50,000, and go scot-free.
But you'd be risking your life.
It's worth it. I'm taking the Jeep. You'll see. I'll be back before night.
Now, I've seen what the desert does to people who know it, son. A tenderfoot like you ain't got a chance.
Thanks for the advice, Pete, but I'm going.
Oh, no, Harry, wait. Listen to me.
Let go, Viola.
Pete, stop him, please.
Yeah, your wife's right, son. You ain't thinking clear. At least wait until you can get a well-organized party together.
I haven't got time. Now, get out of my way, Pete.
I can't let you go alone, son. You'll never come back.
Get out of my way!
No, you don't.
Come on, Oak, it's stuck. Now it can't be much further. The rear wheels are stuck in the sand. Maybe I can slip something underneath. Oh, that sun is strong. Yeah, the wheel has dug itself a nice little hole. Well, there's a shovel in the Jeep. If I jam it up against the tire, maybe I... here it is. If I just... Wait a minute, what's over that ridge? Looks like some sort of structure. Can't be a house. Who could live out here? I better take a look. Pete was right when he said distances were deceiving. The top of this ridge looked like it was within a few yards of the Jeep, and I seemed to be walking forever. The way the heat waves make the air shimmer, I'm not even sure where I am. I'm getting to the top. Now, let's find out just what I saw. Here comes that wind again. Gotta get the sand out of my eyes. That's better. Now, it's the hull of a ship. Yes, this is what I saw from the hill. Look at her, buried in the sand with little more than part of the top deck visible. But it's a ship, all right. Look at the carvings on the rail. I wonder if it's safe to walk on. Yeah, it seems solid enough. And there's something inscribed in the railing. Santa Carlotta. Santa Carlotta! I found the ship! I found it!
Harry, keep calm. This is only half the battle. You don't know if the hull is filled with sand or what. Now, let's look for a hatch. Find a hatch and open it. It'll lead to the interior. Clear away the sand. Hey, I hit something. I gotta dig the sand away. I gotta find out what I hit. Come on now, boy. The sun is beginning to set. There's not much time left. I was right. It is a hatch. Now to get it open. Oh, it's jammed. I can't budge it.
Wait a minute. Pry it open with a shovel.
That's right. I can feel it giving. It's coming up. I can just get my hand underneath the edge. That's it. That's it. Now my other hand. Now if I can just lift it. I got it. I got it. Now, just prop it up with a shovel. That does it.
Wait a minute. Here's the top of a ladder. Wonder if it'll hold me.
Made it down here. It's a long way up. Can just barely see the hatch opening. Looks like I'm in some sort of passageway. Can't see much now. A cigarette lighter. Looks like a door. Open it. Furniture? Table? Looks like charts on the walls. Something over in a corner. Can't make out what it is. Looks white. Seems to glisten a little. Wonder what it is.
Oh!
It's a skull. Scared the life out of me. What was your name, Butcher? Was it Yorick? Did you come riding in on this ship when she hit the desert 400 years ago? Take it easy. Take it easy, Harry. Don't lose your nerve now, boy. Well, the wind seems to be getting stronger. Maybe I better go back and get some help. No, not until I find what I came for. Hey, you, Yorick. Maybe you can tell me. Where's the treasure, huh? Maybe you were left here to guard it, huh? Don't talk. All right, let's take a look. Another door. Stuck.
Come on.
Here we are. Black as night in there.
Well, let's see what Yorick was guarding. Wish I'd brought a flashlight. This lighter doesn't help much. Oh! What's this? Looks like some sort of chest.
Chest. Okay, now to see what's inside. Mother in heaven! Can't be real! Gold, jewels, diamonds, a chest full! I found it! Oh, what a magnificent sight! Coins, jewels. Fill my pockets, cram them in. Come on. Wait, there's a burlap bag in the Jeep. I'll get that.
Oh, Viola, Pete. What'll you say when I come staring in carrying this magnificent fortune?
Can't hold any more. I gotta get back to the Jeep.
So long, Yorick. Don't be sad. I'll be back.
Flame is getting low on the lighter. Well, I won't need it much longer. What? What was that?
The wind isn't so loud.
Where's the ladder to the hatchway? It's so dark. Oh, wait a minute, what is this? The shovel.
Oh, the wind blew the hatch down. Well, that's all right. I'll just climb up and force it open. Here's a ladder. There's a ladder. Now, here's the hatch. Now, let's get it open and get back to the Jeep. Seems to be stuck. I think it's giving a little. Have to rest a minute. Catch my breath. The wind is really getting strong out there.
Wind. Sand. Oh, my God. It'll blow the sand on the deck. It'll cover the hatch. Pile it up. Tons and tons of sand. I've got to get the hatch open now. Push harder, Harry. Push harder. Harder.
Suspense is produced and directed by Fred Hendrickson. Heard in tonight's story were Matt Cooper, Gene Gillespie, and Bill Adams. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Walter Otto. Technical direction by Fred Turner. This is Stuart Metz speaking. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from August 26th, 1962, their second-to-last month of broadcasting on CBS Radio after 20 years of radio's outstanding theater of thrills. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVenier. Coming up next, a writer who wrote exclusively for Suspense and Escape, John Collier's tale, Evening Primrose. He was best known for his contributions to the Suspense series with stories like Wet Saturday and Back for Christmas. In this Escape episode is first featured on the show, we hear Evening Primrose, which was repeated twice on the series. Starring Paul Frees, Elliot Lewis, and Pat Lowry from November 5th, 1947 on CBS.
Election bet yesterday? Feel a bad cold coming on? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you escape.
You were groping in the midnight dimness of a gigantic department store, and suddenly you realize that you're not alone. But 100 eyes are glaring at you from the shadows. 100 hands reaching for your throat. And your most urgent desire is to escape.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully plotted to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to the dark labyrinth of a giant department store in the dead of night, and to a fantastic world of night dwellers, as John Collier imagines it in his eerie story, Evening Primrose.
Sadie, hey, what's the matter? It's me.
Oh, Sam, you nearly scared me to death. What do you mean, coming in so quiet?
I didn't mean to scare you. I thought you'd be asleep. I didn't want to wake you.
Oh, Sam, I'm glad you're home.
Hey, what's the matter?
Oh, it's terrible. You got to do something, Sam.
Well, what's terrible?
It's this. Just look at this.
Oh, what's terrible about that? It looks like an ordinary pad of paper to me.
Yeah, that's just it. That's just what I thought. But it's got writing in it. It's awful.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe you better tell me what this is all about.
Well, today I went shopping down at Bracey's department store. Yeah. I needed some writing paper, so I picked this up. It was on top of the pile and bought it and brought it home. But tonight when I opened it, I found it's got writing in it.
Well, that's nothing so terrible. Just take it back tomorrow and they can give you a new one.
Oh, no, you don't understand. It's what... written in it that's so terrible.
What do you mean, what's written in it?
Here, you gotta read it.
Oh, Sadie.
No, right now. Read it.
Look, Sadie, I'm tired. I've been bawling all
day. Please, Sam, please. Just read it.
All right, for Pete's sake. October 13th. Today I made my decision. I decided to say goodbye to the world, to get out, leave, break away. And I have done it. Ah, Sadie, it's a lot of...
Go on, read.
And now I am free. Really free.
Yes, I am free at last. The world is an intolerable place for a poet. I was broke, starving, at my wit's end. And then I had a brilliant idea. I would escape to a place where I had no need to earn a living, where I could write to my heart's content in peace and security. Where is this place? Right under your nose. So close you'd never think of it. I am now living in Bracey's department store. I have everything within arm's reach that anyone would need or desire. And it's all free. Absolutely free. I arrived this afternoon. I'd spent 3 days looking over all of the department stores in town. I decided on Bracey's because of the completeness of their food department. Therefore, this afternoon, I entered the store and went immediately to the fourth floor, to the rug department, and hid myself in this dusty, out-of-the-way corner behind a pile of carpets. Once I'm settled, I'll furnish it with the best of modern pieces from the furniture department. It's small, but I'll be cozy enough. And safe. After the store closed, I made my first venture out. I tiptoed as far as the stationery counter and got this paper, the writer's primary need. Now, after making my initial entry, I'll go out and get food, wine, the pillows for my bed, perhaps a fancy dressing gown. This is perfect. I'll be able to write here. Dawn, October 14th. I'm almost too unnerved to write this. The whole thing is unbelievable. After the store was dark and completely quiet, I crept out and started for the food department. One's footsteps echo hollowly in an empty department store at night, and I found myself gliding along the floor on tiptoe, moving as silently as possible. But the sound of footsteps persisted. Suddenly, I realized they were not my own. The night watchman. I was in the Salon Moderne. Quickly, I seized a mink coat from a hanger, draped it about my shoulders, and stood stock still. I could have reached out and touched him, but he passed by without so much as a glance. He started to smile, but the smile froze on my lips. There was someone else here. I was looking straight into a pair of eyes. Large, flat, luminous, inhuman eyes peering at me from among the Mrs. Taylor suits a dozen feet away. They belonged to a creature dressed as a man, but he was as pale as a creature found under a stone. His hands hanging motionless at his sides looked more like the fins on a fish than human hands. And then he spoke.
Not bad for a beginner.
I'm sorry. I didn't know anybody else lived here.
Oh, yes. We live here. It's delightful.
We?
Yes, all of us. Don't you see? Look around you.
I looked around. I saw nothing. I looked again. I saw an old man come clambering out from behind a clock. There were three elderly ingenues, incredibly emaciated, pale as lace, almost transparent, simpering before the perfume counter. A chintzy lady swam out from the curtains and drapes. They came swarming thick around me, pale, thin, wispy, moving silently, fluttering like gauze in the wind, whispering.
Oh, he looks.
Who is he?
As coarse as the sun.
What is he doing here?
A detective. Send for the dark man.
Yes, send for the dark man.
The dark man.
They were pressing around me, clawing, holding me, their pale faces contorted with venomous, inhuman hatred. I was paralyzed. All I could do was repeat over and over again, I'm not a detective. I'm not a detective. I'm not
a burglar, then. A burglar? Tie him up.
Hold him. Carry him to the police.
Send for the dark men.
Stop. Stop. Let him speak.
I'm not a detective. Or a burglar. I'm a poet.
Then what are you doing here?
I've renounced the world. I came here to live where I could be alone. Away from the world.
Why then, he's come over to us. He's just like us.
He's come over to us. A poet.
He must meet Mrs. Vanderpant.
Yes, Mrs. Vanderpant. She's coming now.
I followed their eyes toward the balcony. There. Coming down the wall like an ancient spider clambered an old lady. Wrinkled and cracked and emaciated, she must have been at least 80. A shadowy matriarch. And the things around me bowed and scraped as she reached the floor and floated toward us.
What's going on here? Where is that stupid girl? What's keeping her?
Oh, Mrs. Vanderpant.
Well, what is it? Who's this, Mr. Roscoe?
Mrs. Vanderpant. May I present Mr.
Snell, Mr. Snell, Mr. Charles Snell.
Yes, yes, of course. Mr. Snell. He is a poet, and he's come here to live.
Oh, he has he?
That's what he says, and I believe him.
Well?
He avoided the night watchman quite neatly, for a beginner.
Well, thank you.
Very well, we shall see. A poet should find inspiration here.
Mr. Snell, Mrs. Vanderpant is our grand old lady.
Oh?
I am quite the oldest inhabitant here, Mr. Snell. 3 mergers and a complete rebuilding. But they didn't get rid of me.
Oh, really?
Oh, where is Ella? Where is my broth?
She's bringing it, Mrs. Vanderpant.
Oh, terrible little creature. She is our foundling, Mr. Snell. She's not quite our sort.
Is that so?
I have been here, Mr. Snell, ever since the terrible times of the 80s. I was a young girl then. A beauty, they say. And poor Papa lost his money. Oh, braces meant a lot to a young girl in those days. So when I wasn't able to have a charger come, I came here for good. That's better than a charger come. I was quite alarmed when others began to come after the crash of 1907. But it was the dear judge.
How do you do?
Yes. The colonel.
How do you do?
Yes.
Mrs. Bilby.
How do you do?
Mrs. Bilby writes plays.
Oh.
Anne comes of an old Philadelphia family. Oh, you will find us quite nice here, Mr. Snell.
I'm sure I will.
And, of course, all our dear young people came in 1929. Their poor papas jumped from skyscrapers. They couldn't bear to be without charge accounts either.
Do you mean all these people live here?
Oh, and many more. You shall meet them all later.
Oh, here comes Ella with my blonde.
Come, you stupid thing.
Mrs. Vanderpant is waiting.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. I'm coming as fast as I can.
Now, you careful. Don't spill it.
Oh, but she's young.
Well, of course, she is a little younger than most of them.
And she's different. She's beautiful.
Mr. Snell, Ella is Mrs. Vanderpant's maid.
That's right, old man. She's really not our sort at all.
You shouldn't say such things. She can hear you.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
You'll understand these things better after you've been here a while.
But it seems to me that
Mr.
you would...
Mr. Snell, we have certain rules here. They are necessary for our survival. I'm sure you won't find it hard to observe them.
Well, yes, I appreciate...
I should advise that you try. If you do not, that would be most unfortunate, Mr. Snell. Most unfortunate for you.
October 15. You can imagine my feelings last night. My first thought was to escape as quickly as possible. In fact, I planned to wait till morning when the store opened, then quit my hiding place, mingle with the crowds, and leave Bracey's forever. But just at dawn, Mr. Roscoe brought me a cup of coffee, which must have been drugged, for I fell asleep. And when I awoke, I found I had slept all day. And night was closing over the store once more. Later, I've spent my second night here. I saw Ella again. Ella, the pearl of this remote, fantastic cave. She's not like the others. A trifle pale, but otherwise normal and human and beautiful. A child of perhaps 18. She's the only thing that makes this nightmare bearable. October 20th. Escape seems almost impossible. There's a very effective burglar alarm system and the doors are all carefully guarded. But that's nothing compared to the dark men. Who are the dark men? I don't know. But they threatened any transgressor with these dark men. I shall try to discover who they are. At least I'm sure I'm watched, though they've begun to trust me now. Speaking to the night watchman would be suicide. Even if he believed my fantastic story or didn't shoot me as a burglar, I'm convinced that neither Ella nor I could get out of here alive. She and the night watchman are the only real people here. And how the others hate the night watchman.
Odious, vulgar creature. He reeks of the coarse sun.
Oh, come now, Mrs. Bilby. He's really a personable young man. Very young for a night watchman.
Mr. Snell, sometimes I wonder about your taste.
You mustn't stay so much to yourself, Mr. Snell. You must become better acquainted with our ways.
Yes, old man. You must come to the play tonight. We're going to be entertained with one of Mrs. Bilby's tragic comedies. Love in Shadowland. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
I'm sure I will.
It's really a festive occasion, you know. Wanamaker's is coming over.
Wanamaker's?
Yes. The entire colony over at Wanamaker's is coming here en masse to attend the play.
You mean there are people living in other stores?
Oh, dear, yes. Didn't you know? Of course, the best people live in Bracey's and Wanamaker's.
Oh, come now, Mrs. Bilby. There's some very nice people at Alton's.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Bilby.
Oh, hello, Ella.
Good evening, Mr. Snell. Mrs. Bilby.
Well, what is it?
Please, ma'am, I'd so love to see your play tonight. May I have your permission?
Certainly not. You know better than that, you stupid creature. You know where you belong? In the basement for the garbage can.
But Mrs. Bilby, couldn't...
Mr. Snell.
Ella, you're becoming entirely too forward of late. I'd advise you to watch your step. Remember the dark men.
Oh, no, please, Mr. Roscoe. I'll be good. I promise I will. No, please don't send for the dark men. I'm sorry, Mrs. Bilby. Excuse me.
Ella, come back.
Mr. Snell, you forget yourself. Let her go.
But how can you treat her like that? Why do you always frighten her? And what is all this about the dark men?
Well, the dark men...
Oh, please, Mr. Roscoe, not now. You'd spoil our whole evening. And I do so want Mr. Snell to enjoy my play.
Very well. Later, Mr. Snell.
But I want to know about the dark men.
Later.
Mm-hmm. October 21st. At last, I found an opportunity to speak to Ella alone. I hadn't dared to speak to her before. Here one has a sense always of pale eyes secretly watching. But last night at the play, I induced a fit of hiccups. As I anticipated, I was sternly reprimanded and told to go and secrete myself in the basement where the night watchman wouldn't hear me. This was exactly what I had planned. I went to the basement. There in the darkness, among the garbage cans and the rats, I heard sobbing. Ella. Ella?
Oh.
Ella, is that you?
Yes.
Why are you crying? What is it, Ella?
They wouldn't even let me see the play.
Is that all?
Oh, Mr. Snell, I'm so unhappy.
There, there. You mustn't cry.
You're the only one who's kind.
Ella, why are you here? Why do they treat you so differently?
Because I'm not like them. I didn't choose to come here.
You mean you're held prisoner?
Yes. You see, I was only 6. I came here on a shopping tour with my mother. I got lost and fell asleep behind a counter. It was dark when I awoke and they found me. Some of them wanted to send for the dark men because they were afraid I would tell on them. But Mrs. Vanderpant said no, I could stay and be your maid. I've been here ever since.
Since you were 6? Haven't you ever tried to get away?
No. I don't know anything about out there. I wouldn't know what to do. Besides, I'm afraid. If anyone tries to get out, they send for the dark men.
Ella, who are the dark men?
Don't you know? Oh, it's horrible.
Tell me.
You know how people live in all the stores, at Gimble's and Bloomingdale's?
Yes,
and...
yes, I know.
Well, the dark men live at the Undertaker's.
Good heavens.
And whenever someone dies or breaks the rules, or when a burglar gets in and sees these people and might tell, they send for the dark men.
Oh, horrible.
They put the body in the butcher shop in the food department. And then the dark men come. I saw them once. It was terrible.
What do they do?
They go in where the dead person is. They have wax with them and all sorts of things. And when they're gone, there's just a wax model left on the counter. Then people put a frock on it, or a bathing suit, mix it up with the other wax models in the windows. And nobody ever knows.
Ella, you mean all these dummies around us?
Oh, not all of them. But if you displease these people, the same thing will happen to you.
October 30th. I haven't kept up my journal. Writing has been out of the question. Once more, I'm frozen with terror. But not for myself now. For Ella. They hate her. Any time they might turn against her and send for the dark men. My mind is filled with her. I dream of her every day. I'd live to see her at night. We've managed it several times. They trust me now and let me roam about without interference. Finally, tonight, I met her again and said it. Ella, I love you.
Oh, Charles.
I love you, Ella. Let's get married. Or whatever they do here. Then we can live together in my home in the carpet department. They wouldn't dare hurt you then.
Oh, Charles,
don't look so dismayed. If you like, we'll go away from here. Maybe we can get transferred to Bergdorf Goodman's, overlooking Central Park.
Don't, Charles, don't. You mustn't.
But I love you. Ella, you're not in love with someone else.
Yes, Charles, I am.
But who? I thought you hated them all. It must be Roscoe. He's the only one that's young enough.
Oh, no, Charles, not Roscoe. Especially not him. I do hate them all. They make me shudder.
Well, who is it then?
Him.
Who?
The night watchman.
No, impossible.
I love him. He smells of the sun.
Ella.
Oh, it was wonderful the way it happened. Don't tell on me, Charles, or they'll punish me.
Oh, no, no.
I was careless, and there he was, coming around the corner in the ladies' lingerie department. I was caught. There were only some wax models in their underthings. There was nothing else to do. I slipped off my dress and stood still. He stopped and looked at me. And Charles, he spoke to me. He said, "Say, honey, I wish they made him like you on 8th Avenue. Charles, wasn't that a lovely thing to say?
Personally, I should have said Park Avenue.
It doesn't matter what street. It was a lovely thing to say.
But what can you do about him? Ella, he belongs to another world.
Yes.
to 8th Avenue. I want to go there. Charles, are you really my friend?
Yes, of course I am.
And I'll tell you, I'm going to stand there again in the lingerie department, so he'll see me.
And then?
Perhaps he'll speak to me again.
Ella, you're only torturing yourself.
No, because this time I shall answer him. He'll take me away.
Take you away? Oh, no, Ella, I couldn't bear that. You don't love him. You only think you do because you think he'll take you out of here, but you don't know that he will. And I will, Ella. I've made up my mind.
No, Charles, I couldn't let you do it. Even if I loved you, you couldn't do it, Charles.
Why not?
Because you really belong here. You've become one of them now.
Ella, you mustn't say that.
It's true. And, Charles, I got to go. There's someone watching us. I feel it.
No, wait, Ella.
Goodbye, Charles.
No, Ella. Come back. Ella.
Please, old man. You'll arouse the night watchman.
Roscoe.
Yes. Oh, love can be very upsetting, can't it?
You heard?
Yes. Just the last moment or so. Very touching. Yet it's understandable. I've been attracted to Ella myself. So she loves another, hmm? Too bad, old boy. Who could it be? Could it be that I am the cause of your heartbreak?
You flatter yourself too much, Roscoe.
Well, then whom? The old judge? Oh, certainly not. The colonel? Hardly.
None of those.
Oh, not one of the customers. The staff?
She loves the night watchman. Can you imagine that? She loves the...
Oh?
Roscoe, I shouldn't have said that. It's not true. At least I don't think it's true. You wouldn't... Roscoe, you said you loved her, too. You wouldn't do anything. Tell anybody. This is a secret between us. Between friends, isn't it?
Of course, old man. As secret as the grave.
She's young. Perhaps he'll leave and she'll forget him in time. Who knows? Perhaps she'll learn to love you or me.
Of course, in time.
And we'll figure a way to keep her safe here.
Absolutely safe. Now, don't you worry about it. It's almost dawn. Time for bed. Good morning, Mr. Snell.
Early evening, November 4th. I was a fool. I should have known he couldn't be trusted. He must have gone straight to Mrs. Vanderpant because this evening the atmosphere has changed. People flicker to and fro, smiling nervously, horribly, with a sort of frightened, sadistic exaltation. An informal dance in the record department has been called off. I can't find Ella. I'm going out again now to look for her. Roscoe, what have you done with her?
Shh, quiet, old boy, the night watchman.
I don't care. What have you done?
Whatever I did was for your own good as well as for the good of us all.
Wait a minute. What is that? What are those people carrying? That's Ella. She's tied up. They're carrying... Ella! Ella!
Stop!
Charles, stop it!
Please, stop.
Oh, let me go!
No, stop, Charles, stop it. You'll arouse the night watchman.
No, they're taking her in for the butcher shop. Let's go.
Yes. Those are the dark men.
Good Lord. Midnight. I'm scribbling this last entry hurriedly. They are in there in the butcher shop with Ella. The dark men. There's only one thing to do. I'm going to find the night watchman and tell him. He and I will save her. If we can. And if we are overpowered, well, I will leave this pad on the stationery counter. Tomorrow, if I live, I will recover it. If I do not, whoever finds this and reads it, look in the store windows. Look for three new wax dummies. Two men, one rather sensitive looking. And a girl. She has blonde hair and blue eyes, and her nose turns up a little. Look for us. And then find them. Smoke them out.
Exterminate them. Avenge us.
Oh, Sam, isn't it horrible?
Ah.
We've got to do something. Tell somebody something. Oh, Sam, what'll we do?
Do? For nothing. Go to bed.
But Sam...
Oh, whoever wrote this has sure got a weird sense of humor. It's probably some clerk down at Bracey's who ought to be fired.
But... You mean you think it's just a story?
Are you kidding? You don't believe this stuff, do you?
Well, I don't know. I
oh, just... forget it, baby. What a snap out of it. I shouldn't leave you alone. You get too many ideas when I go out bowling at night.
But, don't you think maybe we ought to just, take it back and show somebody?
Oh, nuts. It's not worth a bother. They'd laugh at you, baby. They'd think you were crazy or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you're right. I guess I was silly.
Forget it. Oh, come on. Let's go to bed. Huh? I'm tired.
Okay. Okay, Sam. Gee, you know, there for a while I sure was scared. Oh, I even forgot what I was going to tell you. Sam, I found the cutest dress today, only $19.95.
Yeah, baby?
Yeah. It was in the window at Bracey's. It was on a beautiful little wax model with blonde hair, blue eyes, and a turned-up nose. And there were two men standing beside...
Escape, on Tuned to Yesterday with John Collier's story, Evening Primrose, from November 5th, 1947. That brings to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeFanier. Thanks for tuning in.